Hey there. Ready to dive into some seriously under the radar stories from the Bible?
Oh, yeah.
We're cracking open the book of 2 Samuel chapters 21 and 23.
Okay.
Now, I know what you're thinking. David and Goliath, been there, done that.
Right.
But trust me, this isn't your typical Sunday school stuff.
No.
We're talking ancient curses, political intrigue, and a king caught in some seriously impossible situation.
Yeah, it's a different side of David.
Oh, and get this. A band of warriors with almost superhuman abilities.
Oh, yeah.
It's Game of Thrones meets the Old Testament, and by the end of this, you'll see King David in a whole new light,
Yeah.
grapple with how justice worked way back then, and maybe even be inspired by the sheer loyalty of these legendary mighty men.
It's a side of David we rarely explore,
Right.
and it really reveals the complexities of his reign and the challenges he faced beyond the battlefield.
Absolutely. So first things first, let's set the scene.
Okay.
Israel is in the grip of a devastating 3-year famine. People are desperate, crops are failing, and King David, understandably, wants answers.
Right.
So he turns to God, like any good king would. But here's where it gets interesting.
Okay.
The cause of this famine isn't a drought or locusts, it's a broken oath from generations past.
And this is where we bump into the ancient concept of blood vengeance,
Okay.
which was a huge deal in that time and culture.
Yeah.
Breaking an oath wasn't just a social misstep.
Yeah.
It was considered a grave offense against God, and the
God.
consequences, they weren't just for the oath breaker,
Yeah.
but could ripple out and affect their entire family and even the community.
Really?
It was a deeply serious matter.
So who made this oath, and why are generations later paying the price?
Well, it all goes back to King Saul,
Okay.
David's predecessor. Now,
Right.
Saul had his issues.
He did.
Let's just say he wasn't exactly known for making the best choices.
Right.
One of those not so great choices.
Yeah.
He broke a treaty with a group called the Gibeonites.
The Gibeonites.
Yeah.
Now, to understand the gravity of this, we need to rewind a bit further back to the book of Joshua.
Okay. Right.
The Gibeonites were a Canaanite group who, through a bit of clever deception, managed to trick the Israelites into a peace treaty.
Wow.
But a treaty's a treaty,
Right.
even if it was made through trickery.
Yeah.
And breaking it had some serious consequences. Generations later, those consequences came knocking.
So now David's in this impossible position.
Right.
He has to find a way to satisfy the Gibeonites' demand for justice, which is a pretty heavy concept in itself.
Yeah.
But he also made a sacred vow to protect the descendants of his best friend Jonathan.
Oh.
And guess who Jonathan's father was?
Let me guess.
Yep, King Saul, the oath breaker.
Oh, wow. Talk about a rock in a hard place.
Well, right?
The Gibeonites weren't interested in monetary compensation. They
Ah.
wanted blood vengeance. A
Okay.
life for a life, as was the custom in their culture.
Specifically, they demanded seven of Saul's male descendants be executed
Wow.
and their bodies publicly displayed on a hill before the Lord.
Intense, right?
Yeah.
And it gets even more heartbreaking when you consider Rizpah,
Okay.
one of Saul's concubines,
Right.
essentially a wife with a slightly lower social standing.
Okay.
She loses 2 sons in this whole ordeal. The text describes her covering their bodies with sackcloth and staying there for months, protecting them from birds and wild animals.
Oh, that's awful.
It's a powerful image of grief and a mother's fierce love in the face of unimaginable loss.
And even the number seven has symbolic weight here.
Okay.
In biblical numerology, seven often represents completeness or fullness.
Okay.
So it wasn't just about revenge.
Yeah.
It was about this idea of complete justice, a full accounting for the lives Saul had taken.
Now, this story really makes you think about our own ideas of justice.
Right. That's
I mean, would we ever hold children accountable for the actions of their parents?
right.
It seems so harsh to us today.
It does.
But in ancient Israel, family and community were so intertwined that the consequences of actions really did ripple outwards. It's kind of like the idea of transgenerational trauma,
Right.
how something that happened generations ago can still affect people today.
And that's where it gets really fascinating,
Yeah.
because even though our legal systems don't directly punish children for their parents' crimes,
Right.
there's still this idea, especially in religious contexts,
Yeah.
that God, as the ultimate judge, might allow consequences to fall on families because of their ancestors' actions.
It's like this ancient tension between individual responsibility and the weight of family history.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's something we still grapple with in different ways today.
We do.
Think about how political dynasties or family businesses can be affected by the actions of previous
Yeah,
generations.
it's true. It's a reminder that actions have consequences, sometimes far beyond what we can initially imagine, and that sense of interconnectedness between generations and within a community, it's something we see throughout these stories.
It's heavy stuff, for sure.
Yeah.
But hey, on a lighter note, King David wasn't just dealing with famines and blood feuds.
Right.
He also had this crew of incredible warriors, practically superhuman in their abilities.
He did.
If you're talking about David's mighty men.
Oh, yeah.
What can you tell us about these legendary figures?
Well, these weren't just your average soldiers.
Okay.
They were highly skilled.
Uh-huh.
Fiercely loyal to David.
Right.
And often credited with incredible feats of strength and courage.
Yeah.
Their stories weren't just about brute force. Mm. They were about strategy, tactical brilliance, and this unwavering devotion to their king.
Okay, so give us the highlights.
Okay.
What kind of amazing feats are we talking about?
Well, in chapter 21, we read about Abishai.
Okay.
One of David's most trusted warriors, saving an exhausted David from a giant Philistine warrior, wielding a massive spearhead. The text describes the Philistines as a descendant of the Rephaim, who were known for their size and strength.
Right.
Almost mythical figures in their own right.
It sounds like something straight out of a movie.
It does.
David, weary from battle, facing this imposing giant.
Right.
And Abishai steps in to save the day.
Yeah.
It must have been a pretty incredible sight.
Absolutely. And then there's Sibbecai and Ethanan, who also take down giant descendants of the Rephaim.
Wow.
These guys were taking on the stuff of legends.
And we can't forget the three unnamed warriors.
Oh, yes.
Who risked their lives just to bring David water from a well in Bethlehem.
That's a great story.
That story always gets me. David's thirsty, probably longing for a taste of home.
Yeah.
And these three warriors fight their way through enemy lines just to bring him water.
Yeah.
It speaks volumes about their loyalty and willingness to put themselves in danger for their king.
Their devotion.
And then David, so moved by their sacrifice, pours the water out as an offering to God.
It's a powerful moment.
Right.
That highlights the depth of their bond.
Yeah.
It wasn't just about following orders.
Yeah.
It was about this deep respect and devotion.
Yeah.
They understood the risks.
Uh-huh.
But their loyalty to David outweighed any fear.
And then there's Benaiah, the total action hero of the group.
Oh, yeah.
What's the most impressive Benaiah story, in your opinion?
Oh, it's hard to choose just one.
Yeah.
There's the one where he kills a lion in a pit on a snowy day.
Wow.
Imagine the scene.
Okay.
Slippery slopes, freezing temperatures, and this ferocious lion trapped in a pit.
Okay.
Benaiah doesn't hesitate.
No.
He goes right in and takes down the lion.
Talk about nerves of steel. This guy was fearless.
And if that wasn't enough,
there's
another story where he slays a giant Egyptian warrior, not with a sword or spear, but by snatching the Egyptian's own spear and using it against him.
It's like something out of an action movie.
It is.
Benaiah seems to embody all the qualities of a true warrior. Strength, skill, and this unwavering courage in the face of danger.
Exactly. And these stories weren't just meant to entertain.
No.
They served a greater purpose.
Okay.
They helped elevate David's status.
Uh-huh.
He wasn't just a king.
Right.
He was a king protected by God.
Yeah.
Surrounded by these incredibly loyal and capable men.
It's like ancient PR, right?
It is.
Behold, the king and his awesome crew.
Exactly.
It reinforces his authority and makes him seem almost invincible.
Precisely. It sends a message of power and stability to both his followers and potential enemies.
Okay, let's shift gears a bit.
All right.
We've been focusing on chapter 21, but chapter 22 takes a more poetic turn.
It does.
It's a full-blown song of thanksgiving from David.
Oh, wow.
Praising God for protection and deliverance from danger.
Okay.
It's a pretty epic chapter, right?
It is. It's actually the longest chapter in the entire book of Samuel.
Wow.
And it appears almost word for word in the book of Psalms as well.
Really?
So it's a text that has resonated with people for centuries.
So what's the heart of this song? What message is David trying to convey?
Well, on the surface, it's a recounting of David's many trials and tribulations, battles fought, betrayals endured, even being hunted by his own people.
Wow.
But what makes it so powerful
is
that David attributes his survival and ultimate victory to God.
Okay.
It's a raw emotional expression of his faith and a testament to the deep trust he placed in God, even in the darkest of times.
He's not just boasting about his own strength.
No.
He's acknowledging that he wouldn't be where he is without divine intervention.
Exactly. It's a reminder that even kings Even those who seem to have it all experience hardship and rely on a power greater than themselves for strength and guidance.
And then we get to chapter 23.
Okay.
And there's another poem.
Okay.
It was shorter, but referred to as David's last words.
Okay.
It's a different kind of vibe.
It is. This one feels more reflective.
Yeah.
Almost like a final charge to the people of Israel.
Right.
It's less about recounting past victories.
Yeah.
And more about emphasizing the importance of just leadership, righteousness, and the blessings that come from following God's ways.
It's like the wise old king passing on his hard-earned wisdom,
right?
Reflecting on what truly matters at the end of a life filled with both triumph and tragedy.
Absolutely. He underscores that true power and security don't come from military might or political maneuvering, but from a right relationship with God.
And then it's like the author decided we needed a little more action.
A little bit more action.
Because we get back to the mighty men.
Yes.
What new adventures do they get up to in this chapter?
Well, we hear about that incredible story of the three warriors breaking through enemy lines to get water for David from the well in Bethlehem.
Right.
It's a testament to their loyalty, their courage, and their understanding of what David truly valued.
It's such a simple act.
It is.
Getting a drink of water.
Right.
But in that context.
Yeah.
It becomes this incredibly powerful gesture.
Absolutely.
It's about more than just quenching thirst.
No.
It's about honoring a bond that runs deeper than any battlefield victory.
And it's a reminder that acts of service, even seemingly small ones, can have a profound impact.
Okay, so we have to talk about Benaiah again.
Oh, Benaiah.
Because this guy just keeps topping himself.
He does.
He kills a lion in a pit on a snowy day.
Right.
Slays his giant Egyptian. And then, in this chapter, he takes down another lion, this time in a cistern.
Oh, my goodness.
It almost seems like the author was running out of ways to depict Benaiah's incredible strength and courage.
It does.
He becomes this almost mythical figure.
Right.
A symbol of David's powerful and loyal forces.
Benaiah definitely steals the show.
Right.
But we also hear about this elite group within the mighty men called the Three.
Okay.
Were they like the special forces of David's army?
You could say that.
They were known for their exceptional skill and bravery, often taking on the most dangerous missions.
Okay, so riddle me this.
Okay.
We're told David has this group called the 30. But the text actually lists 37 names.
Right.
What's up with that?
It's one of those biblical mysteries that scholars have debated for centuries.
I bet.
Maybe the group expanded over time.
Okay.
Or maybe 30 was more of a symbolic designation for this elite group.
Yeah.
Even if the actual number fluctuated.
Kind of like how we still call it the Big Ten Conference.
Right.
Even though there are way more than 10 teams.
Exactly.
Sometimes tradition outweighs accuracy.
Exactly. And it reminds us that even in ancient texts, things aren't always as clear-cut as they might seem on the surface.
So we may never know the exact inner workings of the 30.
Right.
But their legendary status is undeniable.
It is.
Their stories have been passed down through generations.
Yeah.
Inspiring countless people with their bravery and unwavering loyalty.
And I think that's what makes these stories so compelling, even thousands of years later.
Right.
They tap into something universal about the human experience. The desire for connection, the need for belonging, and the power of loyalty and courage in the face of adversity.
It makes you wonder if David knew how legendary these warriors would become.
Right.
How their stories would be told and retold for centuries. It's a powerful legacy to leave behind.
It really is. And I think it speaks to the impact that individuals can have.
Right.
Not just through their own actions, but through the inspiration they ignite in others.
Okay. So as we wrap up our deep dive into these hidden stories from the time of King David, what are some of the key takeaways you hope our listener will walk away with?
Well, I think it's crucial to remember that even figures like King David, who we often view through a heroic lens, faced incredible challenges and moral dilemmas.
Right.
These stories give us a glimpse into the complexities of leadership, the weight of past actions, and the enduring power of faith, even in the face of adversity.
It humanizes him, right?
Yeah.
We see him not just as a triumphant warrior king,
right,
but also as a man wrestling with tough choices. Relying on the strength of those around him, and ultimately seeking guidance from a higher power.
Exactly. And I think the stories of the mighty men, while thrilling in their own right, also offer us a chance to reflect on the qualities we value in ourselves and those we choose to surround ourselves with.
Right.
Loyalty, courage, selflessness.
Yeah.
These are timeless virtues that resonate just as strongly today as they did back then.
It makes you think about your own mighty men.
Oh, yeah.
That group of friends, family, or colleagues you can count on no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Those people who have your back and inspire you to be your best self.
I think we all need our own mighty men.
Right.
Those individuals who challenge us, support us, and remind us of what truly matters.
Couldn't agree more. And on that note, we'll leave you with one final thought to ponder.
Okay.
We've seen how the actions of one generation can have a ripple effect for generations to come.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that, what choices are we making today that might have unintended consequences for ourselves and those who come after us?
It's a question worth considering, for sure.
It's all about being mindful of our impact, right?
It is.
Not just on the present,
no,
but on the future as well.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
My pleasure.
It's been a fascinating exploration of history, faith, and human nature.
I agree.
Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep those brains firing.